Hey there, my name's Gary Sims, and this is Gary Explained. Now, we've had the iPhone launch for 2022. We've had the new Google Pixel launch for 2022. We've kind of come to the end of all the major mobile processor announcements for this year. So in this video, I want to compare Apple's offering with Google's offering, with Qualcomm's offering, with Samsung's offering, with MediaTek's offering, to see what you get in each of these processors, which one offers the best CPU performance, which ones offer the best 3D performance, to help you make a decision about what smartphone you're going to buy in the future. So if you want to find out more, please let me explain. Now, before we dive into the specifications and the performance, we need to look a bit about cadence. That is how often these chips are released. Now, a lot of the chips for Android we saw announced at the beginning of the year. So the Snapdragon, the Exynos were announced at the beginning of the year, and we saw those appearing in devices in early spring. Now, at the other end of the year, you've got kind of the iPhone and Apple's offerings, and you've got the new Google Tensor offerings. So depending on where you mark your 12-month limit depends on whether you class these devices as this year's device or next year's device. So if you just take the year 2022, these are all announced in 2022. Now, what makes things a bit difficult is that Qualcomm tend to announce the technology that will be in the processors kind of at the end of the year, kind of November or December, and then we see them in January and February. Other people say, no, these should be the devices we measure from October all the way through to next October, because that's when Apple released, that's when Google released, so therefore that's the 12-month period. So when you think about it, just think about where do you class it? Because in a few months' time, we're already in October, in a few months' time, we're gonna be in 2023, and people will say, oh, that's last year's chip, but actually last year was only 4 weeks ago. So just think about that rolling 12-month period when you consider these chips. But these were all released in devices, that's the important thing, in 2022, and so this is what you get. Okay, let's start by looking at the specifications. First of all, the CPU. Now, there are three main groups here in the CPU configurations. Let's start with the Apple. Apple designed their own ARM-based, ARM-compatible CPUs. And here we see that the A16 Bionic has got two Everest cores clocked at 3.46 gigahertz and four power efficiency cores, which they call Sawtooth, which are clocked at just over 2 gigahertz. So these are in-house designed by Apple, obviously manufactured by TSMC, which we'll talk about in a minute. And they are different to what we're going to see in the other offerings for the Android space. And now here to the right, we see there are three processors. That's the Snapdragon, the Exynos, and the Dimensity that have a very similar CPU setup. We've got one Cortex-X2 core, three Cortex-A710 cores, and four Cortex-A510 cores. So the four Cortex-A510 are the high power efficiency cores. We then got these middle cores, which used to be the high performance cores. However, now you've got the kind of the ultra high performance core with the X2. That's why it's only one of them, because if there were more, it would kill the battery. And of course, you've got three Cortex-A710 cores. We'll talk more about the fact there's one here and there's two over here in a moment. But basically, the difference between these three is different clock frequencies. So the Snapdragon 8 Plus generation one is 3.2 gigahertz, as is the Dimensity 9000 Plus. And the Exynos 2200 is 2.8 gigahertz. 2.75, 2.5, 2.8. So they've chosen, all of them have chosen something different for the middle cores. And then 1.8 to 2 gigahertz seems to be the kind of the sweet spot for these Cortex-A510 cores. So basically, from a CPU point of view, these three chips are very, very similar. And at the other end, we've got the Tensor G2. Now, as you would have seen in my Tensor G2 video, this has kept the X1 core that you had in the Tensor G1. And there are two of them clocked at 2.85 gigahertz. And this is then balanced by now two Cortex-A78 cores. So again, generations behind what we've got here. And then we've got Cortex-A55 cores, again, generations. Now, the big thing is these ones here are ARM V9, all ARMv9. This is still ARMv8, so they couldn't put in the X2 without going to the A710 and without going to the A510. So all they did from the G1 to the G2 was to change this core, these two cores here, and keep everything else the same. So there we go. So we can see from the start that the G2 is going to be the slowest. Just on paper, we're going to see that, and we'll see that reflected in the benchmarks in a moment. As I said in the videos about the G2, that's because Google are emphasizing more the TPU and the machine learning work that happens, and not necessarily the brute force performance, the raw performance that you get out of the CPU. And when we get to the GPU, again, four different types of GPU. That makes this quite interesting. So first of all, we've got the Apple in-house designed GPU. That's called a five-core GPU. Obviously, it's based on Imagination's Power VR GPU. It's still a deferred tile rendering GPU, and they have a cross-license agreement with Imagination. However, we are told that Apple do much more of the work in-house in designing that. Then you've got the Adreno GPU from Qualcomm. Again, that is a completely in-house designed GPU from Qualcomm that they've been using, obviously, for more than 10 years now, and are developing it year by year. They've recently, Qualcomm has recently changed to not specify any numbers. No, it's not, it's 730. This may be the 730. They just say it's the Adreno GPU and the Snapdragon 8 Plus. That's all we get to know. Then we've got the Eclipse 920, which, of course, is the GPU from AMD, and a lot of people were really hoping that this GPU would make the Exynos a really powerful chip. I made several videos pointing out that making a mobile GPU, certainly the first generation of mobile GPU, is going to be a hard thing to do, to come out on top beating all these other GPUs in your first go, your first rodeo. That's going to be hard. And it looks like, although it seems to be competitive, it certainly wasn't a game changer that a lot of people, especially in the comments when I read some of them, they thought this was going to be the golden bullet that would fix everything. And I was pointing out that it wouldn't be. And that's how it turned out to be. And then the fourth type here is the Mali ARM GPU. Now, here we've got the Mali G710 that goes with A710 and 510. That's all the same generation. And you've got a 10-core one here in the Dimensity 9000. At the other end, what Google did is they upgraded the GPU this year. When they upgraded the A78, they also upgraded to the latest Mali GPU. Now, of course, the GPU doesn't matter about this being ARMv8 or ARMv9. It's agnostic to that. It doesn't mind what CPU connects to, because there's just a bus that connects to it. So they're able to put in the latest ARM Mali GPU, but only a 7-core version. So again, on paper, you can see that that one is going to be slower than that one. And then we'll see how it fares against the others. And then the last thing on this slide is are the caches. Now, we're basically quoting the L3 cache, level 3 cache, and the system level cache. And the more cache you've got, then there are arguments that gives you greater performance. So there are things that show that the performance is minor, but I think that also depends on how the GPU and the memory, the CPU, sorry, and the memory fetching and the prefetchers are built. But you can see that basically for the Tensor, for the Snapdragon, for the Dimensity, and probably for the Exynos, we're looking at fairly low levels. When I say low, I mean, I remember I got my first PC with 4 megabytes of memory. So, you know, the fact you got that as cache in just on a chip is amazing nowadays. But, you know, 4 megabytes L3, 8 megabytes system level, 6 megabytes L3, 4 megabytes system level. So what's that? 12 total there, 10 here, 8 megabytes L3 and 6 system level. So going with 14 here, a bit more than Dimensity. This is probably somewhere similar. And you can see that each manufacturer is kind of trying to balance between. What's the difference between these? The L3 is only for the CPU, so that just feeds the instructions and data into the CPU. System level would also handle things like the GPU, image processor, and so on. So it's able to cache some of that. But of course, the big difference is here. Look at the Apple one, 24 megabytes of system level cache. So doubling basically what anybody else has got as a combine of their L3 and their system level. I'm sure there's L3 cache behind this as well at a CPU level. So Apple just going full out there. And my suspicion is that their way their CPU is designed, it benefits from having big caches in terms of the memory prefetchers and the way it's designed, its pipeline is designed. It really does benefit from having a huge cache and gives it that performance. So we can see that the Apple's also the highest clocked, also has the biggest level of cache. When it comes to RAM, everybody is on LPDDR5, with the exception that Dimensity is on LPDDR5X, which is, according to MediaTek, 20% more power efficiency. This is about power efficiency, not to do with performance and bandwidth, but to do with power efficiency. Now, when we get to machine learning, of course, we've got a whole bunch of different solutions across the board here. Google's big thing is that their Tensor TPU is really just the main star of the Google Tensor. But even the name of the processor is emphasizing the machine learning. Google taking all the machine learning stuff they know from all of the cloud stuff, from Assist, from Google Assistant, from Google Photos, everything that they do, and they make that want to run locally without having to go to the cloud on this very powerful TPU, they call it, here. And that's really the star of the show. That's what they're highlighting. Everybody else does have different levels of neural engine. 16-core neural engine from Apple. Hexagon has got some neural engine stuff now built into it. It's more than just a DSP now, more than just an ISP. Exynos dual core NPU, neural processing unit, and MediaTek have got their APU 590 to distinguish it from previous generations. So the problem with this is it's very hard to determine the actual performance of these things, how well they're doing, because normally it's only the built-in apps that take, you know, most of the credit for them. You know, the camera that's built in, the face unlock, the voice recognition that's using these, and third-party apps, we're still finding it a struggle to find kind of ways of testing these. But there you go. Google, of course, are making the big point of that, and everybody else saying, yes, of course, we've got it. We need it for today's stuff that we're doing with blurring in the background and so on. In fact, I did do a video showing the power of the Hexagon processor on how it was able to do object detection, object recognition, object outlining on live video in the Snapdragon 8 series. So that is actually, will give us a good video to go and see that, to see what I mean by what a TPU, an NPU can do nowadays. When it comes to media decoding, of course, H.264, H.265, VP9 standard across the board. The big one is, who does AV1 decoding? Well, the Tensor does, the Exynos does, and the Dimensity does. As I've said in previous videos, AV1 is not yet mainstream. Having it for future-proofing, some people say you really need to get it now so that in 5 years' time you've got it. My argument is always been that video streams will always still be available in 264, 265, particularly from a lot of the big streaming companies. That could be something you want to consider when you're buying. So that's up to you whether you think now is the time to ensure you've got AV1 decode. When it comes to the modem, again, everybody's supporting 4G LTE. Of course, everyone's supporting 5G. The only one difference is the Dimensity doesn't support millimeter wave. And that's, of course, because in lots of parts of the world, we don't have millimeter wave even implemented. In fact, in my area, there's not even 5G. So, you know, I wouldn't really care whether it supports millimeter wave or not, because I haven't even got 5G yet. So, you know, sub 6. So, again, that's really a box to tick on the specs. If you think the millimeter wave is coming to your area soon and you need to benefit from it, then that's something to watch out for. I doubt that's actually what's going to happen, though. And finally, the process node, you know, what it's actually built using. There are two main companies nowadays that build mobile processors, Samsung and TSMC. They each have different processes that are able to shrink down the size of the transistors, shrink down the gaps between them, the tracks and so on. They come up with different ways of designing the transistors. And what we've got is a 5-nanometer one from Samsung. That's the oldest process node here of all of them. And that's what Google have stuck with the Tensor G2. There was some rumors that it was actually a 4-nanometer Samsung one. It's not. It is the 5-nanometer one. Probably 5LPE. We're not sure. Google hasn't revealed that. And then everybody else is on a, in quotes, 4-nanometer. And TSMC's 4-nanometer for Apple, for Snapdragon, and for Dimensity. The Exynos, of course, being Samsung's chip is built using Samsung's 4-nanometer, which is 4LPE. There is a difference between these nodes and what they offer in terms of transistor density. But we won't go into that too much now. It's probably recognized that TSMC's 4-nanometer is the best process node at the moment, while we're waiting to go down to 3-nanometer, which is a proper density shift, whereas 4-nanometer is really just a tweak of the 5-nanometer. And I've got several videos about this kind of stuff here on this channel if this kind of stuff interests you. Okay, so let's look at some of the performance numbers. So here we are looking at Geekbench 5 single core. That means only one core is used. Higher is better. The champions, of course, are the A15 Bionic and the A16 Bionic. About 10% difference there in performance from the A15 to the A16. Of course, remember the iPhone 14 has got two different chips, depending on whether you get the Pro or the non-Pro version. And Apple have really done kind of the same as Google here, really. They've given you the chip from last year in the phone, and only if you buy the most expensive one do you get the new chip. However, clearly, single score scores are much, much higher for Apple here. Then we get down into the Android phones. So you're basically looking at either the X1 or the X2. The winner here is the ROG Phone 6 with the 8 Plus Generation 1 1309. We've got the Exynos here coming at 1164. We've got the 8, not the 8 Plus, just the 8 Gen 1 at 1220. Then we've got the ROG Phone 6D, which has got the Dimensity 9000 Plus in it, coming in at 986. Now, that's a very low number, especially when you compare to the fact it's got the, you know, it's the Plus version. It's got the Cortex X2 in it. Why is it doing even less than, let's say, the X1 in here? In fact, it's a very similar kind of numbers to what you got. You know, even the G2 here is beating it, all over 1,000 here. We'll talk more about this in a moment. And then you've got the OnePlus 10T, again, with the 8 Plus and with the normal 8, hovering around 1,000. And then 1,000, running around 1,000 here for the G1 and the G2, because they've got the same X1 processor in it. So really the fastest one from Android point of view is the X2, Cortex X2 ones, and the ROG Phone 6. Does very well there, as does the S22 Ultra, for example, but Apple clearly leading the way. Now, when it comes to multi-core, again, Apple leading the way. Big lead here in terms of the A16 Bionic. Multi-core means it uses all cores at the same time, tries to complete a task. Which one can complete the task quickest when all the cores are used? Obviously, if you've got high-performance cores in there as well, they make the multi-core score better as well. So Apple leading the way here. Then again, the ROG Phone 6 with the Snapdragon 8 Plus doing very, very well, catching, really, Apple. But, of course, we know that the Apple chips are at least two generations ahead. And I've got other videos about that here and on the Android Authority channel about why that is. And then here in the mid-3,000, 3,500, we get the rest of the chips here, except for the Google original Tensor, because it had that much lower Cortex A76 core in there. Now they've got the Cortex A78 in there. We can see much better scores across the board. Now the one again to look at here is this ROG Phone 6D with the Dimensity 9000 Plus in it. You'd expect that to have a better score, and that's what we're going to look at now. So let's have a look at these. You've got the ROG Phone 6D, you've got the ROG Phone 6. So some have got the Snapdragon, some have got the Dimensity, you've got the OnePlus 10, some have got the, which has got the Snapdragon 8 Plus in it. And here's the original ROG Phone 16. Now notice this score here is very low, and these ones are much higher. So here we are back up into 1,300, touching 1,400 there. Here we're much higher, up in the 4,000s above 4,000 halfway through, and that's the ROG Phone 6D with the Dimensity 9000 Plus. So why is there a big difference in this one and this one? It's the same phone. Well, it's all about the performance mode. Phones like the ROG Phone 6D and the OnePlus 10 have performance mode, P mode, X mode, which the phone switches on. You have control of. It's not a cheat. You control whether you want it switched on or not, and it will use all the cores at a much greater clock frequency. It will give you much more performance. However, it will use more battery life. So because they're thinking that people, when they're just looking at Instagram or reading Facebook or using Telegram, WhatsApp, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, playing solitaire, Candy Crush, you're not going to need 3.2 gigahertz Cortex X2 running at full power. So they let you have a mode that doesn't use the battery so much, and you get to choose which mode you run it in. Now, when you run it in that mode, yes, the Dimensity 9000 offers much greater performance, and the OnePlus 10T, when it's in that performance mode, offers a bit more performance as well. So there you go, something to note out for these performance modes that are in some of these phones. So the last thing to look at here is some of the 3D scores. So at the top of the list, we've got the ROG Phone 6 with the Snapdragon 8 Plus with the Adreno GPU. That scored over 10,000, as did the OnePlus 10T. Then you get the A14 Pro, just a little bit behind, just under 10,000 there. Then as we slowly go down here, we can find the other, the iPhone 14 with the A15 Bionic in it. And then you can look at the other one. So here is the Mali GPU, for example, in the ROG Phone 6D. Here is the AMD GPU, as I said, making a GPU first time for mobile isn't going to be easy. And while it is competitive, it isn't breaking any records. And then, as I said, here you've got the kind of the Google Tensor ones, because they're using that much lower. And what this score shows us here really is that going from the older Mali to the new one, but reducing the cores, they basically had equivalency, which is what I said in my original Google Tensor video. Really, they were just aiming at equivalency. So you're not losing GPU performance, although you might be here very, very slightly, but you are basically going to, what you got in the original Pixel 6, you're going to get in the Pixel 7, but certainly not going up the charts here. So there you go. So the winner in GPU terms seems to be the Qualcomm, followed by, close behind by Apple's offering. Okay, that's it. My name's Gary Sims. This is Gary Explains. I really hope you enjoyed this video. If you did, please do give it a thumbs up. If you like these kind of videos, why not stick around by subscribing to the channel? Don't forget you can follow me on Twitter at Gary Explains. I also have a monthly newsletter. Go over to GaryExplains.com, type in your email address, no spam, but you will get the email. Okay, that's it. I'll see you in the next one.